G'day guys, thanks so. Oh, all right, I think we're good. G'day guys, thanks so much for joining us today. I've got Liv Jones with us. She's an entrepreneur. She owns multiple businesses. She's a partner to Travis Jones, who I've also interviewed. They own a string of RBT gyms. They've got a marketing business. They've got coaching businesses where they help and mentor guys to 6, 7, 8-figure businesses. And yeah, she's pretty phenomenal as a salesperson. She's a mother, awesome wife. And is there anything that she can't do, Liv?
There's got to be some things I can't do. You caught me off guard there. There are definitely things I can't do. Not very good at whistling is one of them. But no, I do like a challenge. And so I think, you know, something that you would know being in business, that any opportunity, especially as you're growing a business and having something like RBT Gyms, which, you know, we've obviously grown from basically the ground up, you really have to get good at most things. But so for us, it's definitely a focus on finding the things that you're not good at, either becoming really good at them or getting rid of them and giving them to someone else. So there's always a journey, but yes, not very good at whistling.
Cool. Beautiful. We'll write that one down. Could you give us a little bit of an overview? Three challenges that you've had, could have been maybe something in business, maybe something growing up as a child, something, you know, whatever it may be that you've had growing up, and how you overcame them.
Far out. Challenges. I suppose for me, I didn't really have any very big challenges. I mean, when you compare like my life and Trav's life, you know, as a partnership, we have two very different upbringings, two very different experiences. And I think for mine, it's definitely like more the, oh yeah, you know, my parents got divorced, woe be me, join the like 50%+ of the population. But I was really lucky, great school, university. I think my biggest challenges has been overcoming my personality traits effectively. So for me, I'm a huge control freak. I have zero ability to ask for help. I will definitely always try and find a way to do everything and anything that needs to be done. And I will stubbornly try and do that on my own. And I think for the most part, you kill yourself trying to do that. And I think something I had to learn later on, and as Trav and I have had to develop from, you know, typical entrepreneurs to business owners to actually becoming leaders rather than executing on every level of the business, which obviously for anyone who's building a business or is at that level or that stage, you are effectively doing everything within the business. And I think letting go of that to a degree is very hard to do, particularly when you know you're really quite good at it. So, and you know, when it's your baby and your business or your, you know, job, whatever it is that you're doing, and having to let someone else do that is a really difficult thing. So I think one of my biggest challenges was overcoming my incredibly stubborn nature, and probably learning to let go of things a little bit better. The other challenge, probably the biggest challenge for me, and is pretty much one that I think most women who have children come across, which is the massive identity shift that happens when you go from, you know, anything really. It's just the shift into a motherhood. And obviously for me, that, you know, Travis and I, everything that we do is so encapsulated with our work. So for me, it was definitely a huge shift from being just me to being someone's mum. And that's a huge identity shift for, you know, a female, and also a huge shift on their resources, on, you know, their focus and on their value. And so I think you question yourself a lot more than perhaps you ever did, and definitely my personality type ever did. So I think that was a very big challenge for me, was trying to find my new place in life, full well knowing that I actually didn't really care about myself that much anymore, as compared to this really tiny person that relied on me for complete survival, which is a very big shift. And I think that's probably the biggest ones for me. And then obviously the great story of Travis saving my life. But it's always one of those ones where you say, okay, like it was this huge impact on my life, and obviously it was, but people always say, like, did it change your mindset as to what was possible in life, you know, what you wanted to achieve? And it didn't. Like, it really was, you know, the day before I nearly died, the next day I was fine, and obviously not fine, but, you know, our life continued. Nothing changed, nothing shifted, because I think regardless of what happens, you should always live your life trying to take every last inch of it and use it and leave an impact on this world. And that doesn't necessarily always mean scale, but try to see the impact that you can have on the people around you. And are you being a good person, arguably, and trying to make sure that you are making the most of every day? Because you really don't know which one is the last, but the biggest thing that you control is your impact on the world. And that doesn't need to be, you know, do we have our own airline, you know, circa Richard Branson, or, you know, did we completely shift the tech industry like Apple? It's more, what impact did you have on the world, and did you leave it better than you found it? And I think for us, that's why for me, it was a huge moment, because there is a very big awareness that comes with it almost coming to an end and realizing that you have no control over that. But ultimately, it didn't really shift the mindset, because I think you really have to have that mindset no matter what happens to you in life. It's just use it all, make a change.
Cool. Beautiful. All right. There was, you touched and brushed over very, very quickly your parents getting divorced. But also, as you said, like, I went through it as a child as well, and I know that, you know, yay, you know, we're part of the majority. Happy days.
Everyone now. Yeah. It's like, cool.
Yeah, sweet. But the real reality is that a lot of kids are going through this, and for them it's the first time, and for them, they feel like it's everything, and it's not that everyone... Biggest thing, generally, I think, if you probably go back to being in there, if you're anyone similar to me, you feel like you're not understood by anyone. No one can understand you. No one can comprehend what you're going through, the pain, why your parents bitching about each other, all that sort of stuff. And I know a lot of the kids that I teach, and even the parents that will be listening to this, will be in that situation. So what were some of the things that you struggled with in that situation, and how did you move forward from them? And how would you maybe do it differently now to make it easier?
I think, to be fair, you know, in terms of divorce, and I know, you know, we even see it now, kids with parents separating or getting divorced or remarried and new partners and things like that. And I think you do have more of an awareness of the impact of it on other children than you ever do with self-reflection. Because I think when you're in it and you're moving, you never really give your chance. You never really acknowledge that that's what's impacting your behavior or that's what's affecting you. I think you see it much further down the track as an adult. You reflect on what impact it had. I'm very lucky in that my parents to each other were relatively good to each other. So we didn't really have a lot of the infighting. So that was a better part, but I'm a very loyal person. So I had a huge falling out with my dad over it at the time, probably because my dad and I are very similar. And so I think I felt very let down by him, because I felt that I had a very early concept of standards that my dad had set for me, basically. My dad set a lot of standards for me in terms of, you know, how you behave and what you should do and work ethic and all these sort of things that over time, I was about 11, I think, by the time my parents actually separated. So, you know, I was quite ingrained in terms of what was expected of people. And so I think when my dad did the wrong thing, basically, I had huge repercussions in terms of how I interacted with him. So basically we just didn't really talk for a couple of years, you know, nothing really beyond civil stuff. I didn't really make any effort to spend any time with him. That being said, I adore my dad and we see each other every week and, you know, we definitely got past it, but I was pissed at him. I thought he was a shit bloke. And that ultimately was the biggest impact on me, I think, was that it didn't really matter how you held yourself. You couldn't actually rely on other people to live up to the standards. So I think it became something that I set a very high bar then for myself as to what I would accept from people, I think. And so the impact for me was definitely the normal anger, all those sort of things, but I didn't really take it out on anyone else except my dad. And he really got thrashed for it. And then other than that, I think it's definitely tumultuous. I think parents make mistakes all the time. Now being a parent, I can understand that you make mistakes all the time. But I think my parents always tried to do the right thing in that, even in that process. And I think it's probably harder now. I look at it and actually have a lot more appreciation for how hard that must have been for my mum. And I obviously went into protection mode. So I wanted to look after my mum. I wanted to do all those sort of things to make sure she was okay. So I think it really depends on the kids as to what the impact is. But I think if you talk to your kids and you always have, never in my life have I ever thought, you hide things from your parents, you always do. I know my kids will too, God save me. But I think that I never felt as though if I needed something, my parents wouldn't be there. So we always had like an openness to our relationship that meant, you know, if I was in trouble, I always knew I could call my parents. It doesn't mean I didn't push the boundaries, because I think all kids do. And naturally, I think we're supposed to push the boundaries. But I always knew that if I was in trouble, I was never in trouble. You know, like the worst line your parents can say is, I'm not angry, I'm disappointed. But it's, I think if there's that open line of communication and your children always understood, I never questioned that I was more important to my parents than them. I think the relationships that come after your parents getting divorced are probably harder. My stepmom and I still to this day have probably one of the most strained relationships of all time, because to me, she doesn't meet the expectations or the standards that my dad sets for the people in his life. She never met them. And that's where the problem for us always lied. And then my mum always put us first. So I think there's one thing, my mum felt that putting us first made her a better mum. And I think in that she lost who she was. And that kind of goes back to the identity thing that you don't really understand until you have kids. But I think the relationships that follow after, in my experience, were more damaging than the actual separation themselves.
Yeah, could understand that. I'll move on from that one. I would actually like to spend more time on it, but I'll move on from it to what I've got written down. Social media and kids. Yes. You have two of your own. What are your thoughts? I know they're very young and they're probably not really on it, but definitely as kids are, but I don't know, maybe you get on Snapchat and do the photos and all those sorts of things, but is...
They do love a filter.
There you go. Is it a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Do you want your kids on it? Thoughts?
It's such a contentious arena at the moment. And I think Travis and I have to tread a very realistic line, because our life, as you know, is very open on social media. My children feature in all my stories. They are a huge part of our life. They are a huge part of the balance and what, you know, in all elements of our life, you know, Travis and I always want to be leaders and always want to be people that other people look to for support and advice and knowledge. And I think part of that is being prepared to put your standards and your life up for judgment to a certain degree. So part of, you know, obviously my role, a lot of people come to me because they don't understand how I deal with mum's guilt, managing, you know, life, family, kids, husband, relationships, work, you know, still spending time with my kids and interacting with them, and how do I balance it all? So part of that is me sharing that through social media. But that's also easy for me to say because my kids are young. I can control what's seen. I can control what they see. And it came, you know, I guess to a bit of a head recently with those horrible things that were happening with the people hacking the YouTube channels and putting in those horrible messages into the YouTube channels. And, you know, there's always an uproar, and I think people love an opportunity to get on a bandwagon. They love a cause. You know, as human nature is that we love a purpose and we love a reason. But I think part of it is, yes, everything's more accessible, but also education and knowledge is so accessible now, and experiences can be shared so much easier. And I think that when you look back, I mean, my mom used to walk to school for like 6 kilometers on her own as a kid, and she still remembers things happening. You know, she was bullied at school. There was a flasher one day when she was walking to school. You know, like, all these things happen to kids, right? But, you know, and I'm not taking away from the severity of that horrible thing that was happening with the YouTube videos. But at the same time, you have to hope. All you can really do as a parent is hope that you've empowered your children with the knowledge and the confidence and the experience to be able to make their own decisions. I can't protect my children forever, and I fully understand the maternal and parental instinct to want to save your children from everything. But at the same time, I understand that, you know, even when I look at my own experience, my parents love me to the ends of the earth, and they would do anything for me. And I have no question that my parents would throw themselves out in a bus still to save my life. I have no question. But, you know, when I did almost die, there was nothing my parents could do. They weren't there. They didn't know. Travis called them from the hospital where we were in Dubai and went, I have had to call you because they don't know whether she's going to make it. There was nothing my parents could do. And then obviously my mum's first instinct was, I'm going to get on a plane and I'm going to come over. And me being me, I was like, Mum, what are you going to do? I'm stuck here now. Like, I'm fine. There's actually nothing you can do now. You just, I'll get home when I'm allowed to fly home. That's the deal. I'm fine. And I think that as a parent, you have this realization, and I think Travis and I have it to a degree, where you understand, like, all you can do is love them, educate them, empower them, and give them the ability to make those decisions themselves, because I can't make them for them forever. You know, I can tell them what to do now because he's 4 and 2, but ultimately I can already see it. Like, they have their own personalities, they've got their own opinions, you know, and as they grow and develop, I can only hope they're a good person and that they use those powers to actually change the world and understand that they can impact the world and make the world a better place, ultimately.
Awesome. Awesome. Really, really cool. When, for kids, right, I'm just going to stick on the social media for a little bit. When they're a little bit older, they're getting their accounts, putting photos out, getting likes, not getting likes. Times, they're coming. Where if they're getting, you know, if they've got friends who have got like 1,000 followers and they've only got 200 and they're getting really depressed and upset about that, how would you look to handle that situation?
It's a hard one. And I think a lot of it comes down to understanding what the driver is. And I guess some of that comes down to self-esteem and values that your children have instilled in them. And I believe, in my experience, and obviously this is a very broad term because, you know, I only have my own kids and I only have my own experience, and we see the world as we choose to see it. But for me, I think we all had that anyway in our own lifetime, in our own way, in the own way that was relevant and visible to us at that time. You know, how many notes did you get folded and passed? How many boys wanted to date you? You know, when were you picked for sport? Like, shit, do we all remember pinky swearing to be people's partners in sport for the whole term? Like, this shit existed. It just was a reality for us in the reality that we lived in. So, but it was no less visible. It was no less painful. It was no less impactful on how we chose to interact with our friends and our family and our emotions, because it's all relative. So it was real to us for what we dealt with. You know, how many mixtapes did you get? Like, all these things that we dealt with that kids these days have no understanding of. You know, it's just, it was the same thing. It's still understanding that self-esteem and the value that you place on yourself is created by you, by your family environment, And if there's something Travis and I will always tell our kids, it's how much we love them. It's how funny we think they are, how smart we think they are, how talented we think they are. We encourage them in anything that they want to do. We tell them when they're being complete douchebags without question. You know, Jackson's four. He's not an idiot. He knows when he's being an idiot, and we tell him, because I think you have those standards from so early on. And if there's one thing I'm super proud of, is that yes, our kids are very challenging and smart and funny, but they also know when to sit down and shut up. Like, they 100% will push boundaries. But at the end of the day, if Travis turns around to Jackson and gives him that look and goes, you come here, he comes. Like, because there's a hierarchy, but he understands how loved he is. He understands that we think he's brilliant and, you know, smart and funny and has the best eyelashes on the planet, right? He knows all these things about himself. And I believe that as you grow up, they're the things that innately are in the back of your mind. You don't question who you are, because I think those things only matter when you question your values or who you are. And that's why, you know, when I look around, I think a lot of the kids that I see that need a lot of words of affirmation as a love language, it's because they didn't get it early on. They questioned their value to their family or to their parents much earlier than friendships have an impact. You know, we all know the impact of the mother-father relationship on young children. So that foundation is created long before, you know, pinky swears and all the stuff that we grow up with. And for my children, who knows? For the kids today, it's likes, it's video shares, it's all this sort of stuff. But, you know, I know a lot of screwed up kids who are super popular as well. So I think it has to come down to their innate belief in themselves. It goes back to, what does the impact of social media and the YouTube videos and all these things have on kids, is their ability to brush it aside and go, what is the level of importance to this? You know, and is it going to drive me changing my standards to meet where this person's at? And I think all I can do is hope that we've empowered our kids with enough self-esteem to get over the inevitable teenage questionings. Like, we all go through it. So I think you have to find your place in the world, and all we can do is give them the best tools we possibly can to make sure they make as few dumb decisions as possible.
Awesome. I could not have asked for a better answer on that. I absolutely love it. It was so complete on so many levels. Really, really cool.
Awesome.
Just switching tact a little bit now, because I think that was answered so fully. I really don't have any other questions on that. It was brilliant. Financial freedom. What is it for you, and is it important for kids?
I think it's super important for children to understand the value of money, but I also think that it was never something that was held over me as a child. So, you know, I bought my first car. My dad was super tough with money because his father was super tough with money. So you always had to go out and do your own things. You know, we were always finding ways to make money as kids. You know, there was always this drive to excel in what we wanted to do. But ultimately, at the same time, my dad never held back funds for experiences. So my dad always believed, and my mum always believed as well, that experience is what shapes you. It's your ability to see all these different things and interact with all these different people. And you've got to remember, when, you know, nowadays it's so much more, I listen to what happens at my, you know, Jackson's kinder and what, you know, his primary school next year and the things that they value, so different to when we were all at school, that when my parents were focusing so much on exposing me to different cultures and different experiences, it never occurred to me that other people didn't have those experiences, because my family were relatively well off. So, you know, I had access to a lot of things that other kids didn't, and I'm fully aware of that now, but it was also very metered. So, you know, like, Travis laughs because as kids, we used to go to this beach house every weekend. Now, it never occurred to me that other people didn't have beach houses. Like, I just didn't understand that because my family had one. But when you look at our beach house, it hasn't changed since like the 60s.
Yeah.
Like, my mum and my dad had a fight when I was a kid, and my mum slammed one of the kitchen. This explains my dad in a nutshell. slammed one of the cupboards because my dad would have irritated a living shit out of her. She slammed the cupboard, it broke. My dad to this day has not fixed that cupboard. Okay. So we were very, you know, like we had access to things, but it's not like I had jet skis and whatever. Like, you know, we grew up down the road from the kids whose parents created the plastic thing that holds the bread, you know, the little plastic tag that goes on the bread. Okay. They had a beach house just down the road from us. Now they had like the latest jet skis, the latest knee boards, all this sort of stuff, right? We used to go down and like buy like tinnies and put like stupid outboard motors on the back of it and ride on the back with a ski, like a ski rope and a boogie board. Now the core muscles you get from holding yourself on a damn boogie board is insane, right? But we always found a way to have fun and to create experiences. And I think that ultimately, financial freedom for me isn't things. It's the ability to have experiences. It's the ability for us to say, you know, I really, you know, Travis and I love just, you know, we're really quite extroverted introverts. We actually really like spending time together. So for us, it's the ability to go, right, well, we're going to go on date night and it doesn't matter to us, you know, what the babysitter costs, if it's 30 or 35, or if my mum can't help out that weekend that we have to pull in another babysitter, or, you know, it's like, for me, financial freedom is the ability to be able to do the things that you need to do or want to do to enrich your life as a whole and to spend time with the people that you love. Obviously there's so much benefit to financial freedom, to being able to help the people that have helped you throughout your life, to be able to give them, you know, a sense of financial freedom as well. But it's not a driving force, because I think for us, money doesn't drive us. It's the ability to have the experiences that drive us. So anyone who looks at our goals are driven by what we want to be able to achieve or do that leads to that. It's never about how much money's in the bank or anything like that. It's always about, we need this many clients paying this much money so that we can have this staff, so that we can do this, so that we can go out and impact lives. And these are the amount of people that we've changed. And, you know, we get to go on a holiday. It's never as much about money, cars, things, you know, it's just not what drives us. So financial freedom, I guess, is about the ability to share your life with people and to make our kids better and have access to things and to be able to educate them and show them what difference it makes. But, you know, our kids are going to public school. It's not about how much money you can throw away around. It's, you know, is that the best experience for them?
Cool. Awesome. I really love that. Awesome. Obviously that process and getting to that stage where having those experiences, being able to pull in babysitters, do all that sort of stuff, doesn't happen overnight. You just don't wake up and boom, there it is. Or does it? You know, is that just how you wake up?
I wish.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So what would be three simple habits that either kids or even their parents who are looking to sort of move forward from their current financial position, what are three simple habits that they could implement daily to get them closer to having those choices and the ability to have those experiences?
Yep. I think the biggest one is goal setting. I think a lot of people who, particularly people who aren't in business for themselves, rarely do, because I think they, for the most part, it's a huge generalization, but for most part, the way that I see people talk when they run their own business or they generate their own income versus people who have a job is that life happens to them. And so the lack of control that they feel they have over the outcome is very much meted by their belief system. So I think a lot of people fail to set goals. It's really something that should be taught at school. You know, one of my favorite things about Jackson's primary school where he's going is the ability, they talk about visual learning. So there's an outcome that you want, and there are so many ways to achieve that outcome that people, they try one and they go, well, that didn't work. And so they forget the outcome. But really, if you've written them all down at the beginning, you then have to admit to yourself that you're excluding all of these options to achieve what you said you wanted. Now, that means either you didn't really want it or you didn't really map it out in the first place, because it's very hard to ignore a visual representation of what you want. So writing down your goals and communicating them, not to everyone, because the studies show now that public sharing of your goals actually reduces the value of them to you. But if you share them with people that matter to you, and you share them to with a small group of people that actually drive you forward and will hold you accountable, then you're more likely to achieve them. So I think a lot of people fail to write down what they want to achieve and where they want to be in, you know, sometimes people really struggle, and I did originally, with setting very long-term goals. But if you set a longer-term goal and then break that down, it's easier to manufacture while you train yourself to set better goals. And I think people, while they don't really know how to set goals, use that as an excuse or a story that they tell themselves as to not setting goals. But I always think you learn, my dad always said to me, you learn more from failure than you do from success. So I think setting a goal and failing to achieve it is more important than setting a goal and achieving it, because Travis and I have a very strict rule about not losing twice. So if you lose once, that's fine, but learn from why you lost and change that up, because now you've changed the rules of the game. You have a better chance of winning. So if you lose again, you have to look at it and go, well, what don't I have? And this comes down to the next habit that I think a lot of people let go of, is education. So always be learning. Like, I love, and one of the hardest things about having kids was losing the time for myself to learn, because you do have to become very structured about it. So, you know, once upon a time, Travis and I would go have a coffee and like read like for 2 hours. That doesn't happen anymore. So for us, it's about being creative about where you do it. And like jokes, I went to go get, Travis booked me in to get my nails and mani-pedi done the other day, which is like a huge, you know, thing for me, because I don't really do it anymore because it means I can't work while I'm getting it done. So anyone who follows me knows I get my hair blow waved every single Friday. But if you see me in that salon, it's like a mini office. Like, they laugh at me because I am getting shit done. But if I'm getting my nails done, I've been hamstrung. So I forgot my headphones. So the entire nail salon got to listen to the book I'm reading, like Audible, because I was like, well, fuck, I'm not wasting this like valuable hour that I've got here to learn. So everyone listened to it. Great. Blitzscaling. It's a great book. So everyone was listening to it because I was like, why do I care? Like, they're all reading like their fucking Women's Day, Women's Weekly. And I don't judge them for that. That's their choice to use their time as they wish. But for me, unfortunately, I forgot my headphones. So everyone's now going to learn something about blitzscaling in Silicon Valley, right? So you have to let go of who you think you should be to become the person that you need to be or that you want to be. So I think that involves, again, a certain security in who you are, that I don't care. Like, shit, it's 30 minutes. They're probably talking about me in, you know, like Thai or Vietnamese or whatever it is that they're talking about me anyway. So at least give them something to talk about.
Cool. Third habit. For your goal setting, education, what would a third one be?
Goal setting, education, and I think my biggest other ritual would be for financial freedom. It is always the pursuit of excellence. So I think a lot of people coast, and it's something that I think you always have to be prepared to reflect and go, am I doing enough? Could I do more? Am I being the best version of myself? And that doesn't mean you are every day, because we are definitely have up days and down days, and every human being does, and you're tired or you're sick. And, you know, like Finn, my second child, didn't like barely slept for his first 11 months of life. And that was one of the first times in my life I ever asked for help. I called a night nanny and I messaged her at like 3 a.m. in the morning because the little shit wouldn't sleep. And I was literally, it was when I realized I didn't actually know how, I was so on autopilot that I was basically drunk. And it was like, I hadn't ever admitted the impact of the sleep deprivation was having on me. So obviously the best version of myself then is different to me at my peak. Yeah. But I had to always say, I'm not operating, I'm not doing enough, I'm not being enough for him, for my other son. I'm endangering, at one point, endangering people's lives because I was driving so tired that I had to admit that I needed help. And I always had to ask more of myself. And part of that was going, okay, I need help. And so reaching out and actually going, I need help to do X, Y, Z meant I could pull myself out of what was effectively a big black hole. But you always need to ask more of yourself. There's always more in the tank. And I think it's setting the standards is something that we talk a lot about. But I, you know, was reading a really good book the other day. It was like a Harvard Business Review on the lessons you can learn from sports. And one of the interviews or one of the Harvard Business Reviews was with the Manchester United Ferguson, Alex Ferguson, who obviously ran Man United up until what, 2013, from like 1986. And he was the standards that he set. There was no bad training sessions. There was no off days, you know, and the people, the star performers, Beckham, Ronaldo, you know, Van Persie, the reason why some of the guys got kicked off the team was because they didn't meet the standards. It didn't matter that Nistelrooy was the best striker they had. They sold him. Because he started complaining about when he was being benched or anything like that. You always have to set the standard and you have to say, I'm either meeting it or I'm not, and then adjust and always push yourself further. Because if you're coasting, why do you expect excellence? Life is not fair. Life sucks. It is hard. Bad shit happens every day to good people, you know, and it's one of my favorite interviews on the Graham Norton show, I think it was. And one of the guys, I can't remember his name, he was being interviewed. And, you know, it was obviously around the time where gay marriage was like a huge political statement. Everyone was using it as a soapbox at the time. And they asked him the question, like, you know, if you get to the pearly gates, what are you going to say to St. Peter? And he turned around and said, what the fuck with children's cancer? Like, honestly, like what, of all the things. And like everyone was so surprised because he didn't say anything about his personal life. He was like, let's look at the order of life and what really sucks. But life isn't fair. So you have to stop saying this generation of entitlement is exhausting because you aren't owed anything. You have to be prepared to outwork people every single day. And even once you've achieved it, the greats never stop. They keep going. They are driven by the next goal, by the next achievement that they want to make or the next change that they want to elicit in the world, depending on what, you know, school of thought they come from. But ultimately, if you think that because you're on this earth, you are owed anything, you will lose. Like, you will get left behind. And I love Will Smith, you know, and it's one of those things where when Will Smith says, if you get on the treadmill next to me, I'm either going to die or I'm going to beat you, because I will keep lifting that bar every single time. So if they're outrunning him, he's just going to keep pushing that button to go faster, because you have to be willing to push yourself. And that's why, you know, with training the gym and things like that, like I love group training. I love all that stuff. And one of the things that Trav did very early on, very well as a coach, is he always set the standards. And he always said the last 5 seconds of a set, there's two types of people. One, there's the people that push to get the most out of those 5 seconds and will not put that kettlebell down or stop banging those ropes or that weight until after that set is finished. Or there's the people who start to preemptively slow down because there's only 5 seconds left. Now, the people in life who are 9 times out of 10 successful are the people that push all the way to the end until they think they're going to puke, because that's where change happens. It's outside your comfort zone every day of the week and twice on Sundays. It is on the outside of the comfort zone. So you can't be comfortable. If you're comfortable, you're coasting.
Cool. Awesome. Love it. Beautiful. Now, I'm pretty much at the time now. Are you okay to answer a couple of questions though? Because I don't want to take it. We've got other things. Cool.
Go for it.
I know you're... those habits, brilliant, first of all, but I know you're a very big believer in being very conscious on the people that you have closest to you. I'd love you to talk about this for parents, but also for if you sort of look at that in relation to kids as well, or how would you look at that for kids?
I think it's one of the things that is parents are always aware, even with their own kids and when they look back at their own childhood, it was something I think most parents are very aware of, that if your kids hang out with people who have lower standards or misbehave or do all those sort of things, then there's a very good likelihood that they too will drop their standards. And there's so many studies on this. No one really needs to go into it because we only need to open a book for 4 seconds before there's a study about proximity. And so I think that, again, it comes down to setting the standards for yourself and for your children, because that's all you can do. It goes back to the beginning of our conversation, where you can only set your kids up with this foundation for the standards that ultimately only they can ever hold themselves to. I can't hold them to those standards. I can only help them set them, or hope that I've given them the foundation to set fantastic standards. But I think that if they understand that about themselves, if they have enough self-worth, then ultimately they will start to pick the people that push them further, and always to provide enough, I suppose, variety. Like, one of the things I love about Jackson doing martial arts is the standards. And it's about understanding that, you know, the older kids are there and they're always guiding the kids as to what's possible and holding them to higher standards. And I think the greatest, you know, you watch certain kids and you're like, that's a special one. Like, that's a special kid right there. And it's the way that they interact with children younger than themselves, and the way that they want to lead them to be better at whatever they're doing. And I think you can be great at whatever you choose to be. You know, there needs to be great janitors in the world. You know, like, there needs to be people who hold themselves to a high standard when they're cleaning a goddamn hospital. Like, you need to have people who have really high standards for themselves in everything that they do. So I think that for children, they are going to, and we all did. I don't think I know a single person who didn't dally with the wrong friendship group at some point. But ultimately, the first few times that you're put into a position you don't like, the stronger children will choose to leave. They don't tie their value to the validation that they get from that friendship group. They seek another one. And I think if children are given lots of different avenues to have friends, it's not just their school friends. You know, they've got their tennis friends, or they've got their, you know, I had friends from, you know, my horse riding. I had friends from my netball. I had friends from school. I had friends from outside of school, from dance and theater. And I'd had so many different friendship groups that you start to realize the different layers that they can bring to your life. And I think when you add family and friends to that as well, you know, you're automatically given a greater sample size. Yeah. So I think you can make better choices. It doesn't mean you always make the right ones, but you can make better choices.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I really like that. If you're looking at parents, for example, parents that want to move forward financially, surrounding themselves with different people. Common story might be, you know, but all I do, I go to work, I'm with my work colleagues. I come home, I'm with my kids and my partner. And then we go to bed. Then I do it again the next day. Then I do it again the next day, the next day. When it gets to the weekend, I'm just tired. I don't want to go out. I don't want to meet people. I don't want to talk. I just want to do nothing. How do those people get around different people? Or
I think there's so much now an awareness and support for wanting to better yourself. Your circumstances will never change while you allow the same limitations or the same stories or the same excuses that you place on yourself, because you are the reason you are anywhere in life. Like, and that's a horrible truth. The only person who can change your circumstance is you. And so I think one of the first places people can and should look is to personal development. And that's not like, you know, airy fairy, you know, smoke screens and crystals, if that's not what that means to you. It is being prepared to question who you are, the standards you have, and the stories that you tell yourself. And there is so much opportunity now with YouTube. You know, there are no excuses. There are podcasts. There are Audible books. You know, like, I usually get about 10 minutes to 15 minutes of a podcast on the car before my kids go, no more talking. Like, we want like the Wiggles, okay? Like, but at the same time, you know, like, I also, like, Jackson knows all the words to The Greatest Showman because I like the words. You know, I like the fact that he understands there's the other side. I like the fact that he understands A Million Dreams are keeping him awake. I like those songs because in the back of his head, They're programming him to believe that things are possible. Apples and bananas doesn't do the same thing from the Wiggles, right? So I think you can be creative about the messages that you give your kids across different channels. But normally I'll get, like, it depends on who's talking. Like, he likes Jordan Peterson's voice for some reason. But you can definitely get some things in there. I think what you believe is possible is what you impart to your children. And I think that if you are willing to challenge what is the norm, if you're willing to push yourself either as a person to learn, and I think that's one of the other habits we're talking about, is always educate yourself. You know, I dislike people, again, with the sense of entitlement that because I've been in a job for a certain period of time, or because I've been playing on this team for a certain period of time, you're entitled to more time on the field, or you're entitled to a pay rise, or you're entitled to a new job title. It's a joke. You have to be contributing either through authority or contribution to anything in your life as to being moving forward. So we always say to Jackson, like, if you want to be the best, you have to work at it. And you get more points for the effort than you do for the actual achievement. But if you lost because you gave it a half-ass effort, that's a loss, and that's a shit loss. If you lost because you gave it everything, you basically spewed on the sideline of the soccer field, then 100% that was a good loss. I'll tick that off as a win. But it's effort. It's people wanting to do something different and then being prepared to put it on the line, potentially look like an idiot. But you know what? I don't care, because that means something to me over there. And it doesn't happen overnight. You have to be prepared to look at all the different avenues of your life and rating yourself and being prepared to be honest. You're not as great as you think you are. And every single time you move up a notch, you've got a different awareness level, or you've got a different group of friends, or you've got a different mentor or coach. And how many times do people shift through coaches? You know, like, Roger Federer doesn't have the same coach he had in the junior leagues. Yeah. Like, you have to be prepared to level up and always look forward, right? Yeah. So, you know, you need to say, if I want to be better, who around me has what I want? And I'm going to go fucking spend some time with them, because they know something I don't know. And then excuses. I'm fucking sick of them. If you didn't get what you want, it's because you didn't see what was there for you to achieve or learn from. You were closed-minded, because every opportunity is presenting a lesson to you. And if you didn't take the lesson, it means because you weren't paying attention. So there is no lost experience. It's always looking for that silver lining. And, you know, the two great tenets of success are always grit and eternal optimism. So if you don't have the grit to keep going when other people would give up, forget it. But if you can't also see the positives in every negative, then it's only a matter of time before you feel like you're losing. And losing is a shit feeling, and people lose momentum, they lose energy, and they lose action. And that's when we start to tell ourselves nothing will change. But you always have to see the positives in things. And if you do, great things happen.
Cool. Amazing. Very, very impressed. Would you have any final words or advice for parents or kids or both to help set them up or move them in the direction that they want to start moving?
I think it's really hard to have final thoughts for people, because I think relationships, parenting, it's such a personal journey. And your kids are your kids for a reason, I believe, because honestly, you have to admit that they are given to you, or they are chosen. They are going to be the person that they are because of you. There is some part of their personality, their environment, that will indelibly mark the person that you are putting out into the world and saying, go forth, do something amazing, and enjoy life. And I think that however you choose to do that as a parent is your own journey. But I always think that if you can show your children, Travis and I work really hard. Anyone who knows us, you know, knows that we come under as much scrutiny for our success as we do for the amount of time that we work or where we've put our focus on. And I think to be a success, you always have to be prepared to deal with the negative as well as the positives. But as I said, like, for us with our kids, it's about understanding that our children know that we're very lucky that we love spending time with each other as a couple. We dedicate a lot of time to our relationship, and we have you know, people laugh at us. Our date nights are structured. They're booked into my diary because they're non-negotiable. And I think a lot of people forget that they book the interruptions into their life, but they never book their life in. And so sometimes they do have this feeling that life happens to them because they don't feel like they're controlling what happens in their day. But if you have a job, if you don't have a job, if you're a stay-at-home mom, I am all the power to you because goddamn kids can be exhausting. You know, and you love them. I'm genetically programmed to love them. And sometimes I just want to like lock them in a room and just padded room because they're crazy sometimes. But you have to structure your day. No one's exempt from this. What do you want to achieve today? What makes today a winning day? And there are days I know as a mum, especially when you've got young kids or you've got kids at home, that it can literally be like, today I'm going to wash my hair. Now, if you don't structure your day around how you're going to do that, if that is your goal for today, fuck, work your day around that because otherwise it won't happen. And that's when people start to feel like they have no control. So if you book in those things, for us, that's a non-negotiable. Then it's in the diary. Date night is a non-negotiable. And for us, it will happen regardless. Our babysitters are booked like 3 months in advance. Everybody knows what their responsibilities are because that's a non-negotiable. And so I think most people need to put more emphasis on who they are as people because, yes, we are parents. And that does definitely change the priorities and the focus that you have in life, but it doesn't change the fact that you are still a person with needs and wants and desires. And for you to be the best parent possible, you have to be emotionally and physically as whole as possible. So go out there and fight for you as much as you fight for your children because they are watching. I promise. Our two-year-old foam rolls, like because he sees his dad do it. They replicate, like they model. And so, you know, it's funny because also my four-year-old has started tapping me on the butt because Trav taps me on the butt. Now, he doesn't mean it in the same way. He doesn't understand. But for him, it's physical touch. You know, like they love, they hug, they kiss, they do because they see it. So for you, your children are always watching. And I think that if you can do something today to try and be a better example for your kids, then that's not to say that you weren't great yesterday. You just always want to be better tomorrow. And so always looking and trying to be a better person, understanding that, yes, we snap as parents, we lose our temper, but what can you do to understand why you lost your temper and try and change that scenario, change that situation? Because I think controlling your environment is something we can all do.
Astonishing. I'm pretty much lost for words. Liv, that was... better than I definitely could have ever hoped for. I appreciate your time enormously. I'm really excited to listen through that about 20 more times and go through it, comb it all out. That was phenomenal. I'm so grateful for that and everything else that you've done for me. I hope that helps as many people as possible. That'd be, I think that was absolutely amazing. First, thank you so much.
No worries, my dear. It's all we can hope to do in the world.
Cheers,
Luke. Try and share our journeys.
Awesome. You're a legend. Bye.
See you, darling.